The big day is approaching. The clock is ticking. You've put off buying a present for weeks, hoping the ideal gift will drop into your lap. But of course, it hasn't. The mission? To buy the perfect present. The dilemma? You're terrible at it.
You run to your laptop and frantically Google ideas. Your fingers hammer down on the mouse, clicking through options and adding filler items to your basket. Check out now. When the gifts arrive, you wrap them in the best paper you can find, adding a large bow and a beautiful name tag to each extravagantly wrapped present. The effort can't go unnoticed, can it?
The big day has arrived. The moment of truth is here. As you hand over the gift, the largest one first, you look at the floor and hold your breath. You picture seeing their face, overwhelmed with gratitude, but knowing that that's wishful thinking. They quickly untie the bow and tear open the paper with excitement, holding the item up to inspect it. Silence.
Moments pass. Excitement fades. Confusion, disbelief, disappointment. And each of your gifts brings a worse reaction than the last. Another year, another disaster. So where are you going wrong? Are you doomed to always be a bad gift giver? What if we told you the answer lies with behavioural science and that we have the simple solution to help you become a master of gift giving?
Hello and welcome to How to Hack the Brain. I'm Ziba Goddard.
And I'm Raffi March. This is the podcast where we figure out how to solve your everyday problems using behavioural science as our guide.
In today's episode, we're giving you the secrets to becoming brilliant at buying gifts for even the toughest of recipients. We'll be talking to expert Dr. Julian Givi, and he'll be giving us the lowdown on what the research tells us about how to physically present your gifts.
If you go to the mall the day before Christmas, it's just going to be hard to do a good job.
And I'll be going undercover, using psychology to win over a notoriously bad receiver of gifts by giving them the perfect engagement present.
If it's someone that I really call a friend, they should know what I like.
As usual, I'll be listening in to see if the tips we've learned really do work in practice. So, Raffi, how to buy the perfect gift? A question so many people wanted answered.
Yes, some people just nail it every time. Others get it really wrong.
Well, believe it or not, there's an epidemic of bad gifting going on right now. In a recent survey on giving around Christmas, 72% of people said they received a gift that was so disappointing or weird that they were confused as to why it was given to them at all. And nearly 40% of people said they received gifts so bad they actually felt insulted, with nearly one in four people saying that they received such a bad gift, it actually led to an argument.
I think when people receive a gift that really isn't them, it can make them question how much you really know them or how much thought you've put in. But I also think many people get so worried about buying the right present that they panic buy. So why do we give gifts in the first place?
Well, it all stems from evolution, and we actually do it to strengthen our social connections. Researchers believe that cavemen gave each other presents, like unusual shaped rocks or animal teeth, to strengthen their social connections and show their appreciation of each other. And as these social structures developed, the gifts became more and more elaborate and decorative. We also do it to receive gifts in return. This is a form of reciprocity, as we know.
Absolutely, and I think one of the other reasons is probably that gift glow. Gift giving, especially spending money on others, makes us feel really good about ourselves. And we release oxytocin, which we call the cuddle hormone. And what that does is it signals trust, safety, and connection. And the effects that have on our brain occur even during the steps leading up to the actual giving of the present, such as shopping for the gift and wrapping it.
So, as we know, Raffi, it's not necessarily the case that you either have the knack or you don't, because through expert advice and the power of behavioural science, we're going to be sharing the key to perfect gift giving, which will hopefully mean our listeners never have to feel stressed about buying gifts ever again. So, Raffs, why don't we start by talking about our famously tricky gift receiver?
Okay, so I've known Pippa since the first year of uni. We were initially rivals in opposing dorms, but we quickly became firm friends. And Pippa actually also met her partner around the same time at uni. She recently got engaged, so this felt like the perfect opportunity to test out some of the science behind giving the perfect present. What everyone knows about her is that she doesn't hold back when it comes to receiving gifts. In fact, she's been known to react quite badly. But don't take my word for it. To give listeners an idea of the kind of gift receiver we're dealing with, a few weeks ago, we sent our producer out to pose as a market researcher and asked Pippa about her attitudes to receiving gifts.
So, would you say that you are a good gift receiver?
If I'm honest, not really. I love giving gifts to people, but when it comes to receiving, I think I'm quite picky about what I actually like, and I find it a bit hard to sometimes hide that from people, I suppose.
Okay. So when you get given a gift that you don't like, what do you say to people?
I think I'll probably try and pretend that I like it, but I think it's probably quite obvious from my face and my reactions that maybe they haven't quite hit the mark.
What's the worst gift that you've received from someone?
Gosh, I don't think there's been anything awful, but I think it's probably from, you know, when you get that rogue aunt or uncle that tries to give you a Christmas present that is probably aimed at about a 6 or 7 year old and you're 17, 18 and it's just doesn't quite do it, not quite for where you are in your life at that point.
So if a friend was to give you a bad gift, would you hide your feelings in the same way as your aunt?
I think I might try to, but not really. I think if it's someone that I really call a friend, they should know what I like, you know, the kind of presents that I would use or that I would enjoy. So it would definitely be harder for me to hide my feelings, and maybe our friendship would be in question.
And have you ever fallen out with a friend after receiving a gift that you didn't like?
I have done, and it was a little bit awkward. We just drifted apart. I felt like maybe we didn't have much in common.
Wow, okay, so the stakes are high.
They are, and I've invited Pippa out for lunch to give her her engagement gift, and of course, I'll be wearing a wire.
Okay, so your friendship with Pippa actually hangs in the balance, and the window of gift-giving opportunity is closing. So you definitely need some expert help, but don't panic yet. As I mentioned earlier, I've spoken to Dr. Julian Givi about his research around gift-giving before we talk behavioural science. Hey, Julian, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Very, very good. Thanks so much for joining us today. So can you start by introducing yourself and just tell us a bit about the research that you do?
Sure. My name is Julian Givi, and I'm an assistant professor of marketing at West Virginia University. And within the marketing world, I fall under the consumer behavior domain. And in particular, I study gift giving. So over the last 10 years, I basically studied all aspects involved with how consumers purchase gifts.
God, what an awesome job. So what does your research tell us about how to approach giving the perfect gift?
So giving the perfect gift is definitely a very challenging task, I think, as we all know. But one good place to start and one tip I like to give people is to go with something sentimental. So this comes from one of my very first research projects. And in this project, what we found is that around the holidays and around these major gift-giving occasions, the vast majority of gifts that tend to be given tend to be more superficial in nature, right? Think about something like a bottle of wine, a gift card, a speaker, a jersey of an athlete, right? These are all kind of more superficial things. But actually, what really hits home and what recipients seem to want to receive are these more sentimental items. By sentimental items, things like maybe like a letter of appreciation, right, that the person writes for you, or a letter about your friendship, maybe a scrapbook that they put together that has a bunch of pictures and memories involved with the relationship. And, you know, I will say that this is one of these tips that I employ in my everyday life, and I found it to be quite successful. You know, whenever you give these sentimental gifts, they really hit home. They really pull on the heartstrings and make recipients quite happy. So I think that might be one way to get started in terms of going for the perfect gift.
Absolutely. No, that's brilliant. Thank you so much. So often when we think about giving a gift, we're thinking about, as you said, these material items, sometimes superficial, sometimes perhaps sentimental. But I know that there's some recent research that's shown that giving experiences is becoming even more popular. What does the research tell us about material versus experiential gifts?
Yeah, so when we look at the gifts that people typically give, they tend to be material items. Like the majority of gifts are more material in nature. And this even is more so for people who are more socially distant from us. So we're kind of even less likely to give them experiences. But what the research finds is that these experiences are quite successful whenever they are given, right? For example, on one hand, when you receive an experiential gift, that actually leads you to become happier than whenever you receive something that's materialistic in nature. And then in addition to looking at happiness, researchers have also looked at which gifts help improve the relationship the most. And they find that whenever you give someone an experience, that actually makes them feel closer to you compared to whenever you give them a material gift. And a cool aspect of this is that this applies seemingly regardless of whether or not you are there doing the experience with them or not. It just generally brings them closer to you.
Fascinating. I feel like the presentation of gifts is something that can be overlooked as well. Is there any data on how best to present your gifts to get maximum impact?
Yeah, so certainly there's some research on the gift wrapping aspect of gift giving. And this is kind of an interesting set of findings, in my opinion. So there's a paper that initially showed that whenever you wrap gifts, as we might expect, that tends to make people like the gifts more than if you just hand them over completely unwrapped. But then interestingly, beyond that, there was follow-up research that shows that just how you wrap the gifts is also important as well. So and kind of counterintuitively, what this research finds is that whenever you wrap gifts like perfectly, like they're perfectly wrapped, the bow placed perfectly, the ribbons, everything look perfect, that actually ends up making people like your gifts less than whenever the gifts are wrapped rather sloppily. And the reason for this is because whenever you wrap things so in such a perfect manner, that kind of raises expectations for the actual gift. And then they're expecting the gift to be perfect, just like the wrapping, right? Whereas whenever it's sloppy, they don't really have any expectations. And so they're happy when they receive the gift. So that's one kind of cool set of findings with when it comes to gift wrapping. But then in addition to that, there's also this finding called the presenter's paradox. So it's another really, really neat finding. And what this shows is that whenever we as gift givers are tasked with choosing between giving one really good gift or one really good gift combined with a lesser gift. So you can imagine, say you're walking through a department store and you get the recipient like a lamp that you know they really want. Whatever at the checkout scanner will oftentimes add on to that. Oh, look, there's this little keychain. Maybe we can give them an addition, right? So we'll give them kind of this big lamp and a keychain as opposed to just the lamp by itself. And that's called the presenter's paradox, where we add on these little tiny additional gifts. But what the research actually shows is that recipients tend to be happier when they're only receiving the lamp by itself as opposed to the lamp with the keychain. And the reason for this is because whenever we're receiving gifts, what we tend to do is we do like an averaging kind of calculation. So we kind of average, okay, if I really like the lamp 10 out of 10, I like the keychain, let's say a 5 out of 10, that brings me to like a 7.5 out of 10. Whereas if I only receive the lamp by itself, I'm at a 10 out of 10, right? So kind of another interesting thing is like, if you have a really, really good gift that you want to give someone, don't feel like you have to kind of add onto it these kind of secondary little tic-tac sort of gifts, because it might end up backfiring.
That's fascinating. I do that all the time. So I will stop myself doing that going forward. But what about when you have a present that needs something? So it's a complimentary good, like you might have a toy that needs some batteries, for example. Does that work?
Yeah, I think that would work, right? Because in that case, it's almost like the gifts are just sort of one gift altogether, right? And if you don't include all the different components, then you're putting some burden on the recipient to have to go out and get the batteries or finish the gift per se.
Okay, so let's talk about Christmas. For me personally, Christmas is completely overwhelming, you know, with budgets and energy for shopping just being spread quite thin. And I don't think it's conducive to giving great gifts either, if I'm honest. Do you have any tips for managing those more stressful times?
100%. So you're not alone in feeling stressed out about buying gifts for Christmas. Even I feel stressed out. Everyone feels stressed out when it comes to this, right? And whenever it comes to this question and feeling stressed about gift giving, I think the secret here is to just give ourselves enough time, right? So if you go to the mall the day before Christmas and you have 10 different people you have to shop for, it's just going to be hard to do a good job, right? It really is. So a strategy I like to use is starting, let's say, mid-October, right? You give yourself 2 months until, you know, the Christmas time, right? And every time anyone who you're going to have to buy a gift for kind of mentions something to you along the lines of, hey, look at that commercial with that product. That'd be so cool to have that. Or, hey, there's this new musical coming to town. Wouldn't that be fun to go see? Anytime they mention these little things like this, kind of make note of it, right? Maybe in a notes app on your phone or wherever. And then if you do this, whenever the time comes for you to actually go about buying gifts, your life's going to be so easy, right? Because you're not going to have to sit there and try to brainstorm, you know, running through the mall, figuring out what to do. And beyond that, you're also going to have things that people have explicitly told you that they like.
Okay, amazing. And finally, do you have any other tips about how to increase the impact of your gift?
One tip that relates to this for sure comes from another paper that I recently published. And in this work, what we found is that, unsurprisingly, the vast majority of gifts are given around special occasions, right? So you just brought up Christmas or birthdays or Valentine's Day or Mother's Day, Father's Day, all these different gift-giving occasions. That's whenever gifts are typically given. But what we've actually found in our research is that it's a lot easier to make people happy whenever you're just giving gifts out of the blue, kind of spontaneously. Or like what we like to call is giving gifts on a random Tuesday, right? It's the middle of March, and you just say, hey, I'm going to bring my significant other a gift, right? And so what we found in our research is that even though gifts are typically given on special occasions, it's a lot easier to make people happy on these random Tuesdays, right? So if you give someone a gift kind of spontaneously out of the blue, you're going to make them quite happy, almost irrespective of what it is, right? Could be a really great expensive gift, could be something just a very simple token of appreciation. And kind of like what I was talking about earlier with expectations, this also relates back to expectations, right? Whenever we're giving on Christmas or birthdays or whatever, we have some expectations. Hey, you should give me something pretty good, right? But whenever it relates to a random Tuesday, we have zero expectations. You know, if someone walks through the door with a gift for us, we're thrilled, right? Just kind of regardless. So that's one tip, I think, to be a little bit more effective with gift giving.
That's absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Julian.
Thanks for having me on.
It's really interesting, some of the points that he was raising, particularly around the type of gifts, you know, superficial and experiential gifts and what the research says around that. And I really thought his point around presenter's paradox was interesting. So knowing what he's saying about superficial and experiential gifts, what are we thinking? That feels to me like it's playing on people's social identity.
Absolutely. And I think this is where I've gone wrong in the past, is I often think of sentimental gifts as if I personalise it as much as possible, then it feels relevant to them. But actually, if you just slap someone's name onto a coaster, that doesn't make it sentimental. Where we need to shift to is tapping into their social identity. So I need to think about, who is Pippa as a person? How does she see herself? And then that will allow me to decide what kind of gift to get.
Exactly. So it's kind of show me, you know me. And what about that idea of the presenter's paradox? I think psychologically that's fascinating. You know, the order of the presents, as we know, the order in which we see things and we make choices is so, so important.
Absolutely. And if you tag a smaller gift onto the end, it actually brings down the whole experience. So we often talk about this in terms of the peak end rule, where we actually take the happiest moments, the worst moment, and then the last moment, and we average them out. So what we need to do is make that last moment actually the best. So in terms of ordering, I would present the best gift last to give us the greatest chance of success, because that's the thing that she's going to remember. And then I want to try and aim really high for these peak moments across the conversation that I have with her. She's not going to remember everything, but I want her to remember the key points where I've given those gifts.
And I think the expectation reality gap is so important around the wrapping of the gift, isn't it? You know, I know the art infusion effect of beautiful wrapping paper is going to spill over into the actual gift, but we don't want to wrap it so beautifully that the actual gift then seems really quite poor in comparison of the high expectation that they've built up. So where are you going to give it to her, Rafi?
So I want to give it to her in her place, where she's going to take the excitement of that location and then put that on the gifts themselves. So I'm going to take her up to the roof. Obviously, there's lots of psychology around that. You often talk about misattribution arousal.
Yeah, this is one of my favourite phenomenons. And it's just really interesting that we actually find people more attractive, according to research, when we're asked to meet a person in a location that elicits kind of fear or heightened emotions in us, such as on a bridge, for example. On a high, rickety bridge, we actually, if we're completing a task, misattribute our emotions to the person that we're talking to and fancy them more.
That explains the amount of people that say yes and get engaged at the top of high buildings.
There you go. Okay, Rafi, so after digesting all those tips from Julian, with our own behavioural science know-how, how are you feeling about the prospect of giving Pippa a gift that's up to scratch?
Well, I think the nerves surrounding her reaction are definitely still there, but I feel way more confident and clear about where to look and how to present them to her.
Great. So let's hear how you've turned the science into a gift-giving strategy.
Well, the first thing is that I've planned to give it to her on the roof terrace to use the misattribution arousal effect. So it's all about harnessing those heightened emotions. The rooftop's not just a cool location, it's a strategic choice to amplify Pippa's emotional response. So when she's up there and she's feeling the breeze, seeing the skyline, her heart rate might be a bit higher and she's more likely to associate those thrilling feelings with the gift-giving moment.
And it's clever because you're not just relying on the gift itself, but also the whole experience around it. The setting, the surprise, the emotional state, all those factors can transform a simple gift-giving moment into something way more memorable and actually impactful.
Absolutely. The next thing that I've then thought about is the wrapping paper. So the art infusion effect is one of my favourite biases, where if you place a product next to a piece of art, people attribute the quality of the art to the product itself. So I've tried to do this by wrapping the gift in a Matisse-style print. It's essentially a way of making a crap gift seem much better.
Ooh, cunning. And how are you stirring emotion and building trust by showing that you know her really well?
So Dr. Givi's insights were invaluable. I've chosen two sentimental gifts that are deeply personal to Pippa, reflecting her interests and our shared memories. These are gifts that say, I know you well and I really value our relationship. And then the third gift is an experience, so something she can enjoy and remember. And those experiences often create more lasting happiness than physical objects.
I really like the sound of that plan. So now for the big moment. Good luck, Rafts.
Right, so I'm bringing you out onto the balcony. Thank you for coming out with me.
You're welcome.
So I've led her to the roof to present the gift at height. So this is the misattribution arousal.
Okay, so a very, very special event happened a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
And we've not had the time yet to actually sit down and celebrate it. So I wanted to bring you out here and give you a couple of gifts to say congratulations on your engagement and also a hug from here.
Thank you.
Right, so your first gift, you've got three. Your first gift is to commemorate where we met, but also where you and Alex met.
Okay, so I've chosen to give the gifts in a specific order. I've given her the smallest one first, and it's the most sentimental one.
You can open it.
I can open it now. Yeah. Okay. Oh, you've wrapped this well.
That's good.
Very cute paper. Oh, a York. Oh, three York prints.
They are. So you've got.
Oh, I love them. York Minster, a classic. Clifford Tower and the Shambles. Oh, that's lovely. Thank you so much.
You're
I'm
very
not a very
welcome.
Emotional person, but you're going to make me cry.
Oh. Well, I was thinking, we met at York.
Yeah.
You and Alex met at York.
Yes.
And also, I just think they're really lovely design prints. And obviously, you're a designer.
I am a designer.
Thought you might.
We were talking that maybe we'll get married in York as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that would be so sweet.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. They're lovely. I love them.
You're so welcome. Let me take them from you and I can give you your second gift.
Number two. Amazing. Okay.
Okay, so on to the second gift. It's still sentimental, but it's practical too.
Okay, so your second gift is to commemorate the actual engagement.
Oh, okay. Next
so
one.
You told me a little story when you sent me the video.
Yes.
Of when Alex engaged. Can you tell me what happened? What was the video?
The one where I'd had a few too many margaritas and I was obliviously dancing down the beach and did not notice the big lit up beach cabana where he was then going to propose until it was right at the moment. Double wrapping. Oh, I know what this is. Love that. Some margarita glasses. I can relive the moment seeing as I didn't remember it the first time. I love that. Thank you. Well, that's very sweet.
You're very welcome. Okay, and then you're final one comes with this card.
Oh, with a little love heart on it. Thank you.
So the final gift is the experience, the pièce de résistance of the gift giving. Hopefully this is going to seal the deal.
Oh, a lovely couple dancing. Oh my gosh, so much writing. To the future Mr. and Mrs. King. You're engaged. Congratulations on your big day. Who could have guessed that love would bloom on Hez East and bring you here? I'm so excited to have been on this journey with you. I'm so excited for you both. Lots of love, Raffy Roo. Oh, there's another side. Here's to many more years of love and happiness, and to get you started, two tickets to puppy yoga. That is money can't buy. That is a MasterCard gift. Priceless. Thank you so much.
It's all right. I know you guys love dogs.
We do love dogs. And you probably can't buy me a dog. That's a bit extreme.
So. Next time.
I love it. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Well, that really did seem to go well. For someone who's really hard to buy for and isn't one to hide the truth, she seemed really happy.
I know. I mean, big sigh of relief. It went even better than I thought it would.
OK, so why don't we see what she really thought? We caught up with her after to get some of her reflections on the experience.
So I've just given you your engagement gift. I just want to know if you like it.
No pressure. No, I actually really do. I think I can tell you put a lot of thought into it and you put our story of our engagement into it. So, yeah, I really appreciate it. I think the York bit is definitely going to go on my wall in our house. And I'm going to have a margarita maybe this evening out of my new glasses.
So when I gave you the gifts, you could tell something was slightly up, probably because I was a bit nervous, because I've heard you're not very good at receiving gifts. So I wanted to try and make it as perfect as possible. What went through your head when I pulled out the first gift?
Well, I was a bit confused, but a little bit apprehensive because I think, you know, engagement gifts can go in very different directions and people's interpretations. But I think the first one I think was wrapped beautifully. I really like the paper. And I think the connection to York was very sweet. So, yeah, I'm very pleased. They're definitely going to go on display in my kitchen.
Oh, well, your kitchen.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in there. I think it's just a nice thing to be able to look at all the time.
That's cute. Do you think Alex will like them? Do you think he'll remember the places?
He was definitely a lot more drunk at uni than I was, so maybe less so. But yeah, York's our special place, so definitely going to have them on display to commemorate it.
That's cute. Really glad that you like them. What do you think about the second one?
Well, I was a bit apprehensive because it was a big box. Wasn't quite sure what could be in there. Could have been anything. But again, it linked nicely into Thailand and all the memories that we have of where we got engaged. Don't know if I want to necessarily remember how drunk I was when we got engaged, but I think it's a nice way to build on the memory. So yeah, very sweet. Thank you.
Last one, the puppy yoga.
Well, I think last but definitely not least, I think good things come in small packages. And that last one was definitely my favourite. I think obviously got some memories of York and some of the memories of Thailand. But yeah, that'll be something very special that me and Alex can do together. Very excited about that one, actually. I think one of the best gifts I've ever received.
Aww. We didn't pay her to say this.
Well, I would say, even though I say so myself, that that was an incredibly successful episode. There's clearly a pretty simple formula to buying and giving gifts, and you managed to win over a notoriously tricky gift receiver, making her almost cry in the process and giving her, by her own reckoning, the best gift she's ever received.
I know, I feel like I've gained a superpower for all future Christmases and birthdays.
Absolutely, and more importantly, our listeners can now take that superpower away too.
Totally.
That was amazing. So let's run through top tips.
Okay, number one, the art of wrapping. You want pretty paper, but not better than the present.
Number two, show me you know me through sentimental and experiential gifts.
Number three, location, location, location. Get up high to get those heightened emotions.
And finally, the power of three. Go for three prezzies and save the best one till last. So thanks to Dr. Julian Givy and of course to Pippa for being such a good sport.
How to Hack the Brain is a Fascinate Productions podcast for Cowrie Consulting, part of the VCCP group. This episode was produced by Frankie Taylor, Rowan Bishop and Richard Willen.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can press follow to be notified about new episodes and leave us a review to help spread the word.
Thanks for listening and see you next time.